Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. All of our coverage at LockedOnBulls.com. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. So right away, Matt, I want to jump right into things here on this episode, and I want to throw this out at you. So thanks to Duncan Smith, who writes for The Athletic in Detroit on the Detroit Pistons. He tweeted out at the end of our show yesterday when he'd get a chance to talk about it, but tweeted out every NBA team's ratings according to teams in the league, where they stacked up in accordance to their offense. So anywhere from spot up shooting to pick and roll ball handler to transition, handoffs, cuts, offensive rebound putbacks, off screens, everything in between. And it stacks up everything. So I was thankful for these stats. But the first and most important part when I was looking over these stats is that even as well as the Bulls have played in December, that stretch of games where they had the 10-game losing streak, and even you talk about the first 25 games of the season, the Bulls were brutal. So I think these stats are kind of slightly off base and a little bit off variance compared to the November and the December that the Bulls had. But some of these numbers are interesting, and you want to know what the Bulls excel the best in, and that's post-ups. And post-ups, the Bulls are number 5 in the league in scoring, and that's where they're the most successful. And I was actually really surprised by that.
I think most Bulls fans would be surprised by it, Jordan, because people who are, you know, watching casually and people who tuned in to see, you know, the lone bright spot that was expected this season, at least until LaVine came back, which is the rookie Lauri Markkanen, who everyone knew as advertised in the draft was a stretch four and a guy who could sink a lot of three-pointers. And, you know, at the start of the season, he had that crazy stretch where he was, like, matching a pace to set the new rookie record for three-pointers made in the NBA. He's off that pace now because of his shooting slump, but between that and Fred Hoiberg finally getting the kind of offense that he wanted to coach all along with the departure of Wade and Butler and Rondo and the departure of Derrick Rose, I think a lot of people expected to see Hoiball, and a lot of people thought that Hoiball exclusively means we're going to play fast and we're going to shoot a lot of threes. Well, we have seen plenty of examples game by game where the Bulls do shoot a lot of threes, but we have also seen, somewhat surprisingly, a lot of times when Hoiberg will look to get some of his bigs easier looks down low, and Markkanen is included in that. And I think that's something that Hoiberg tried to do to get Markkanen out of his shooting slump, was find him easier looks closer to the basket and exploit some mismatches down in the post. And not just for Markkanen, but for Bobby Portis when he came back into after his suspension, for Nico Mirotic when he came back after he was healthy. And, I mean, Robin Lopez isn't really much of a post-up player. It's more so the three guys that I just mentioned, but I mean, it's an element to Fred Hoiberg's offense right now, and it's surprising to a lot of Bulls fans that it's working.
Yeah, I think one of those things that you touched on is Bobby Portis, too. I think we're seeing Bobby Portis knock down more shots in the post than we ever have before, and I think that's a testament to his game, but it's also a testament to Nico being fearless in accordance to driving and also having the confidence to be able to shoot from beyond. It's opening things up for guys down low more, and I was curious about this, too. So I'm looking at the top three ways the Bulls like to score and the percentage of times that they use this throughout the games. And so it's not really that all that, you know, surprising, these three uses, but where the Bulls sit in terms of the league is, I think, surprising. So the Bulls, the most that they shoot in terms of the ways that they want to score is in the spot up. They use it 24% of the time, and their league rank is 25th in the league. So that's below average rating from Synergy. Second is pick and roll ball handler, 17.5% of the time the Bulls score off of this. This is 24th in the league below average. And then in transition, they use this 12.8% of the time they're scoring off of it. Their league rank is 17th, which is just around average in the NBA. So I'm not surprised by those first three. I think what's more surprising is the fact that the pick and roll ball handler isn't working as well as maybe the eye test will tell you. Maybe some of the things that Chris Dunn was doing, and maybe even Justin Holiday when he's been off and on and inconsistent shooting. I think you see that. But the most important thing I read from this is pick and roll ball handler. I feel like that's going to become something that the Bulls are going to excel a little bit better at once Zach LaVine returns. But I was surprised that the Bulls, for as bad as that they played in November and then as good as that they played in December, that some of these numbers aren't a little bit better than I thought that they were.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of a tale of two halves so far when you talk about the Bulls, however 30 some close to 40 games that they've played through this season. And you mentioned the 10 game losing streak and then the 7 game winning streak and the stretch of, you know, winning 10 of 12 that followed. It's the Bulls and where they rank as far as their you know, statistics on offensive efficiency and shooting, I mean, they've been all over the place. So, I mean, I think we'll probably return to some sort of means, return to some sort of average over the course of the season. But you mentioned, I mean, to me, the big wild card here is Zach LaVine when he comes back and what Fred Hoiberg decides to do with this offense as far as usage percentage for LaVine and for the other guys around him. Will they look to run some pick and roll stuff to get LaVine involved? Will Hoiberg continue to try to increase the pace? Because, you know, it's an interesting thing when you talk about doing a pick and roll, or when you talk about some of the success the Bulls have had post up, it seems kind of contradictory to the, you know, the generic definitions of Hoiball as far as Bulls fans understand it, what he did at Iowa State before coming here to Chicago. And you wonder what kind of effect LaVine's return will have on that and their offensive efficiency and everything else that we're talking about there. And I mean, you hope that it's a positive effect. You hope that it adds versatility to what the Bulls are doing offensively on any given night against, you know, certain matchups and certain opponents. And then, of course, there's that lingering thought where, like, well, you hope that LaVine's addition doesn't make the Bulls' offensive efficiency that much better. Because at the end of the day, we don't want them winning games, right? You and I talked yesterday about whether or not Hoiberg purposely tanked by having Nico and Bobby off the floor. Like, I mean, if he did, I'm not too mad about it.
Yeah, so some of the other things, too, that I wanted to make note of in terms of Zach LaVine returning, I think, for one, where the Bulls are sitting. So I read off the top three ways the Bulls like to score and how much that they use it. The fourth and fifth come up in pick-and-roll man, so that includes the guys that we were talking about earlier, Nico Mirotic and Bobby Portis and Lauri Markkanen and even Robin Lopez, are pretty much your key guys in that pick-and-roll man. Also, post-ups was only used 6.1%, and pick-and-roll man was only used 8.2%. So these are all pretty much being used here and there. It's sprinkled in. It's not what the Bulls are focusing on a ton. But I also think that pick-and-roll man, in terms of what Zach LaVine could do, maybe he can play off of that. Maybe Lauri Markkanen can learn something from Nico Mirotic or Bobby Portis and learn how to play in a pick and roll better than he has shown so far. Not having to have him rely so much on that 3-point shooting and that threat that he is really good at. He's the reason the Bulls drafted him is because he's a pure shooter and he's a big man that can score from anywhere. But being able to kind of use his versatility and kind of spread out his game and stretch his game a little bit more, I think will be positive for both Zach LaVine, for guys like Chris Dunn, and even for Lauri Markkanen, even if he's not playing in that pick and roll sort of situation, if he can be the guy that's kicked out to for a wide open three in the corner or something like that, I think it's going to benefit a ton. And maybe I'm just putting a ton of high praise on Zach LaVine when he returns, and I think that he's going to be this offensive superstar when he returns. That might not be the case right away, but I hold Zach LaVine in a high regard, and I feel like people are still kind of sitting back waiting, saying, let's wait and see. I know we're excited, but let's kind of wait and see what's going to happen. But I think him being implemented into this Bulls team is going to do a lot better than some people think he is.
I think so too. And I think something you have to think about is, you know, you talk about the pick and roll that the Bulls have used thus far, and hopefully Chris Dunn continues to improve upon his role in that, you know, in that offensive set when Hoiberg chooses to use it. But, you know, with guys that we're talking about, whether it's Markkanen, whether it's Mirotić, or surprisingly also this season Bobby Portis, who's been shooting the ball very well from deep, it's, you know, you want to have that option of, depending on what the defense does, do you pick and does the big screen man roll to the hoop, or does he leak out? Is it more of a pick and pop? Because Markkanen, Mirotić, and Portis this season have all proven to be able to knock down that shot from outside. LaVine adds an interesting element there, because if you're talking about if the Bulls continue to run sort of a two-man game with Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine, will he be able to be as effective being versatile in what the Bulls do after they initial, you know, after the screener sets the initial screen and Dunn decides what to do with the play? Does he try to, you know, get to the hoop himself or dish? And is he dishing to a man rolling to the rim, or is he dishing out, kicking out for a three? Because LaVine is not necessarily known as a three-point shooter. I mean, I think he's becoming more confident in that element of his game the longer he's been in the league. He's a career 37.8 shooter, last season 38.7. So just, you know, a little bit less than a 1% increase from his career average last season. You wonder if that's something that Hoiberg will really harp on him to work on throughout this season, maybe become more of a confident shooter from range, because that adds one more player on this Bulls roster that can do that kind of stuff Hoiberg wants to do offensively.
Yeah, and Zach LaVine's last 15 games before he was injured, he was clipsing 43% from beyond the arc. So that's something I hope that he can add that element. But the raw athleticism and the driving to the basket, I think if he returns to sort of the way that he was playing when he left the court and he was hurt, I think you open up so many other possibilities that I think Bulls fans and people in the national media that watch basketball on a daily basis don't really understand. If you're watching this team every night, you've got weapons to score, obviously. That's clear cut. The Bulls have played well when they've been sharing the ball and they've been opening up opportunities for not only Chris Dunn to be more of a versatile scorer, but other guys, like you said, Bobby Portis off the bench, Nico Mirotić coming off the bench and playing well. If Justin Holiday can ever figure out to be consistent with his shot night in and night out, he's also a piece. And then you add Zach LaVine and you drop him back in there, and I think it's going to open up a lot of opportunities, not only for Lauri Markkanen, but for Chris Dunn. When in pressure situations, when we talked about in the fourth quarter, who are the guys that that opponents are looking at the Bulls to try and score? If you've got Nico Mirotić out there, obviously, Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, who else? Justin Holiday, he doesn't really seem to me to be some type of fourth quarter threat that teams have to press on. Denzel Valentine's not that guy. Robin Lopez isn't even that guy. So I think once Zach LaVine comes back, even in these closeout games that we talked about yesterday, I think it's going to open up a ton of options. It's going to be whether or not that Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, and some of these other guys that are surrounded them can kind of capitalize on teams maybe pressing and more of a game plan for Zach LaVine once he returns.
And I think that's something worth mentioning. Is it's something that we discussed a couple weeks ago when Markkanen kind of fell into that slump, the first, you know, few game stretch of that slump, is that I think opponents were kind of taken aback, kind of caught off guard with what Markkanen was able to do and how confidently he was playing on the offensive end when he first came in, you know, playing his first dozen or so games as a rookie. And then teams kind of started defensively game planning for Markkanen to try to take away what it was that he was doing through the first dozen or so games of the Bulls season that was effective. And when you add a Zach LaVine to the mix, as you said, Jordan, it opens up. It's going to open up more opportunities for Markkanen to get looks all over the floor, and not just Markkanen, but everybody else that's sharing that court with LaVine at the time.
All right, so now we need to have this discussion. I feel like it's prominent, and it's something that is kind of been confusing over the since the beginning of December when the Bulls went on their win streak, and now kind of hanging around in these games with competitive teams. It's barring a question here. So if the NBA season ended today, the Bulls would have a 4.3% chance of getting a top pick in this coming draft. They would have a 15% chance of getting an overall top three pick. So I've harped on it before, and I've said it before the season started. Most people were in agreeance, most fans were in agreeance, that the Bulls should tank, that they should try to get that top five pick and stay focused on what they're trying to do here is ultimately rebuild and have a better chance of getting that franchise player in 2018 draft. So now that we're kind of in the first week, we're in the first week of the new year, we're looking at this team and we're getting closer and closer to that trade deadline, that sort of that benchmark where Nico Mirotic can be traded on January 15th. And now I start to look at this team and ask myself, well, there's cases for both sides. There's cases where the Bulls shouldn't be advocately trying to remove pieces from this team in order to tank to try and get that pick. You look around the league, some other teams that have tried to do that have floundered, and they've stayed in that spot for 5-6 years. I'm looking at Phoenix Suns, looking at you guys. The other way is to be a little bit more competitive, be a little bit more surprising than what the Bulls thought that they were going to be at the beginning of the season, and sort of riding that wave. Are you still in the camp that the Bulls should tank, or maybe are you possibly having the feelings of maybe we should reevaluate this situation?
I mean, I think to me the ideal situation, and this is being said while also recognizing the whole idea of it's really hard for young guys to be constantly losing games and it really does a damage to their psyche and their morale, and I get that. And it's nice that the Bulls, for the sake of the morale of this young team, put that little win streak together. They've been playing better. But when we were losing in that 10-game losing streak, and we were playing competitively against decent opponents and just kind of, we couldn't get that one closed out at the end, that's ideal. And you try to grow and build upon the fact that, hey, like, we can play with some of these other teams in the league. And, you know, losses like the loss to Cleveland that ended the 7-game winning streak, where the Bulls were playing on the second night of a back-to-back, and LeBron played a heavy load of minutes and was very much needed to get that win for Cleveland. Like, the Bulls, who everybody, you know, at one point were 3-20, and everybody said, wow, this is the worst team in the league, put a nice winning streak together, and then we're playing, you know, tooth and nail with Cleveland. That's encouraging stuff, and that's stuff you want to see. At the same time, I mean, you cannot ignore the fact that there are some real star potential players at the top of the 2018 draft class. And then there is a significant drop off after, say, the top four or five. Now, I'm not saying that I am freaking out because I'm worried that the Bulls are losing their chances at, you know, the most ping pong balls to get the number one overall pick. And we all know, thanks to Derrick Rose in 2008, that you don't necessarily need the most ping pong balls and you can get lucky. But look at the Bulls are 13-24. Atlanta, with the worst record in the league, 10-27. Like, that's not a huge gap. The Bulls can still go on big losing streak here or there several more times throughout this season and be okay. And I would much rather that be the case than the Bulls win 35 games and pick somewhere like 10 or later. To me, it's pertinent to get that top-tier draft pick in the upcoming draft.
Yeah, I feel like the Chicago Bulls, if you think back to the movie Tommy Boy, and when David Spade and Chris Farley are sitting in the restaurant after David Spade smacked him over the face with a 2x4, he's sitting there.
It doesn't hurt here or here so much, but right here, holy God, what happened to your face?
So he's sitting there explaining to the waitress that he really wants some chicken wings, and the waitress said, yep, the kitchen's closed.
Boy, some chicken wings would really hit the spot. You sure it's closed?
Let me check.
Yep, it's closed.
So basically, the Chicago Bulls are Chris Farley sitting there, and he goes on and explains why he sucks at sales. And so this is directly parallel to why I feel like I'm sitting here as a Chicago Bulls fan, and there, Chris Farley is the symbol of what the Chicago Bulls are.
Let me tell you why I suck as a salesman. Let's say I go into some guy's office. Let's say he's even remotely interested in buying something. Well, then I get all excited. I'm like JoJo, the idiot circus boy with a pretty new pet. The pet is my possible sale. Oh, my pretty little pet. I love you. So I stroke it, and I pet it, and I massage it. Yeah, I love it. I love my little naughty pet. You're naughty. And then I take my naughty pet, and I go... Oh, I killed it! I killed my sale! That's when I blow it.
And that's what I feel like this is right now. It's like we held on to something good. We knew what was going to happen, even though it was terrible basketball to watch over the first 25 games. The Bulls were in a place, they were in a direction that we thought we wanted to go. And at the end, even though that he destroyed what he was sitting there holding, which was a biscuit, comparing it to brake pads, this is ultimately he got the reward that he wanted. He wanted the chicken wings. So maybe, just maybe, the Chicago Bulls are in this place where what they thought they wanted at the beginning of the season might not be exactly what you end up with at the end of the season. And I don't know. I at this point, I have to reevaluate things. I think I have to sit here and think, well, okay, if we're at this point where we're in the middle of the pack of, say, separating ourselves from being a top five team, getting a draft pick in 2018, or being a team that flounders at the end of the lottery, like teams like Charlotte have for a while and other teams that have tried to rebuild. So I think these weeks, over the next 3-4 weeks, I think it's going to be crucial for the front office to make a statement in terms of whether or not they're going to trade somebody, whether or not they're going to come out and say what they're doing. And I would probably go with the first option rather than the latter, because we know how the Bulls front office communicates with its fan base, not very well. So I think this is going to be a crucial week, and I'm okay with taking a step back and reevaluating what's going on, but there's got to be a plan in place. There's got to be some decision making to be made. And I think the worst possible thing the Bulls could do is just stand pat and do nothing and let this play out, because ultimately then what are you going to do? Exactly what you said, win what, 30, 35 games and hang out in the back of the back half of the lottery? No thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. And I think maybe something else that might need mentioning here, and you can laugh at this, you can, maybe you're one of the NBA fans who actually put stock in it and believes it's a real thing. You said, hey, you know, maybe the Bulls get lucky and, you know, what's the waitress, what's her name, Helen, turns the fryers on and makes some wings for Tommy. Like, maybe the Bulls get lucky, and by lucky I mean maybe they realize that the Bulls are the third largest market team in the NBA, one of the biggest fan bases in the NBA globally, not just in the country. And the NBA is better when the Bulls are a team that wants to be a nationally televised team, that are in the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe that's why the Bulls, with a 1.7% chance, got Derrick Rose in 2008. Maybe that's why, even if the Bulls do not have the best positioning and the most ping pong balls, they'll find themselves in the top three somehow. There is a lot of talk about the fact that the NBA draft lottery is rigged. And I mean, why? Is it inconceivable to think that the reason that there is all of that talk about big market teams getting lucky over the course of the history of the NBA draft lottery, maybe there's a reason for that? Maybe Adam Silver, like Helen, the waitress, looks at Tommy, looks at Gar Foreman and says, God, you're sick.
Am I right? God, you're sick.
And takes pity on him and throws the Bulls a bone. Who knows?
Well, to top that off, too, it's not like we're going to obviously get people after this episode say, oh, you guys said that Tanky was the number one. No, okay. It doesn't change my feelings about how I want the Bulls, what I want the Bulls to do this season. Like I said, and I'm going to stick to it to the end of the season. If the Bulls don't get a top five pick in this draft, it's a failure of a season.
Then they screwed up the plan. It's as simple as that.
Exactly. So we're just giving you guys, we're sitting here letting you guys know that at this point, January 3rd, 2018, that this conversation's got to happen, because up until January 15th, and if Nico's not gone by the 16th, then we legitimately have to have this conversation too again. And that also includes whether or not the Bulls string together a couple more wins, you know, go on another small little win streak here. Like, that could be a realistic possibility going to the next 2 weeks, when you can finally open up some legitimate trade talks for guys like Nico Mirotic. And obviously they can have ongoing talks for Robin Lopez, maybe some of these other guys, Justin Holiday. But I think that important piece to what the Bulls really are going to do with the rest of the season is Nico Mirotic, and they need to make a decision on that as soon as January 15th hits.
Well said, Jordan. All right, well, before either of us has a heart attack talking about the Bulls screwing up the tank, and before we move on to our next segment, let's take a breath. And I want to tell our Locked On Bulls listeners about Draft. Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft. Play in a real live NBA draft right now and be done in under 5 minutes. Best part, you get paid out the very next day. And drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit and you use your promo code LOBULLS. That's right, play in a real money draft for free just by using promo code LOBULLS. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love their program that they're even offering Locked On Bulls listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com right now and play for free with promo code LOBULLS.
So it's mail time! And so here we've got a bunch of different questions for this mail bag, but I feel like...
Hold up, Jory. Was that an odd to Blues Clues? Was that a tip of the cap to Blues Clues?
Hey,
because
you know
if, so, I respect it.
I'm one of those millennials that kind of sits on that border where I still remember Blues Clues in shows that came out in the, you know, early mid 90s. I'm still one of those fans. I'm not like an early millennial who doesn't even remember shows that were on Disney Channel before they were all cartoons and things like that, or Nickelodeon or Nick at Night, all those different channels. I'm probably reminiscing for anybody that's in between 23 and 32 right now. But yes, all right, mailbag,
hey,
mail time.
If anybody out there is hating on Blues Clues, then they don't know what they're talking.
All right, so let's get it. Let's investigate here as they would on Blues Clues. So there was three questions from that were mildly similar, and they all include something. What's the value of Rolo? What's the value of Nico Mirotic? What's the value of guys like Justin Holiday? And I want to kind of wrap all these questions into one, and we can kind of talk about the whole entire thing. So Peter, Mike, and Kinu, thank you for sending in your questions. So it's basically, what can the Bulls get for Robin Lopez? What can they get for Nico Mirotic? And I feel like we've answered these questions before, but this is kind of a little bit more of a progress as we're getting to that January 15th date. So I came up with one team that I thought of, and I don't like to get into the whole trade machine NBA thing. It's fun to look at and to compare salaries, but until you know exactly what's going on and what the team wants or doesn't want, it's just all a bunch of speculation. It's fun, though. So I'm going to throw one team out there, and I think the Wizards, if you're looking at any NBA team right now that has underperformed and should be a team that should be hanging around the fourth, fifth, sixth seed, that should be probably a top three team in that East, it's probably the Washington Wizards. After what we had saw last season and hopefully seeing if they can take that step up. I mean, as a Bulls fan, we just saw them on Sunday too. So I feel like if there's a trade partner in which the Bulls can land valued young talent or draft picks, it would come from the Washington Wizards. The Wizards have one contract in particular, Jan Mahinmi, who's on their books for two more years at $17 million. He's been basically a non-factor for the Wizards. So if the Bulls can draw up something like that onto a maybe like a guy like Kelly Oubre, and I don't know if the Wizards are even remotely thinking about giving up a piece like that to add someone like Nico Mirotic, but it makes it interesting. You've got to look at the teams that are not only competing but have large contracts that basically are a waste of space. And so that's why I looked at the Wizards and I said, you know what, a stretch four that can score, a stretch four that can shoot the three, you know what, Nico Mirotic, Washington DC might not be all that bad for you, and it could end up being isn't playing into the Bulls' favor, because ultimately, what is Nico Mirotic's trade value? What do you think his trade value is, Matt?
I mean, I think it's, as we've said, a hell of a lot higher than it was when he was sitting on the bench with a broken face and had, you know, three pretty middling at best seasons under his belt. That being said, you know, Bulls fans who just are talking in generalities of like, yeah, trade Nico for a first round draft pick. Okay, like, pump the brakes. It obviously depends on where in the first round you're talking about. Do I think the Bulls can get even a top 20 pick for Nico? No, I don't. I don't think he has that value attached to him right now, because this is something else we've talked about on this show. Those draft picks are so overvalued because of the unknown and the potential of what might be, when really sometimes a 19th or a 20th pick kind of turns out to be nothing. But it's the allure of, I know what I have in this player. I don't know what I might have with that pick. It's like Peter Griffin in Family Guy saying, you know, they can either take a free boat or the mystery box. And Peter's like, well, you know, God, Lois, like, you know, a boat's a boat, but a mystery box could be anything. It could even be a boat. And she's like, well, so let's just take the boat. He's like, we'll take the box. Like, that's how NBA teams value these first round draft picks that highly and almost illogically. So because of that, no, I don't think Nico could generate a first round draft pick in a trade, maybe a very late first round draft pick. And if you're talking about the Bulls trying to acquire draft picks and maybe using the cap flexibility that they have, you know, they've got 15 mil in cap space right now that is going to just go unused if they don't make a move here at the deadline, take on a bad contract and get a draft pick with it. So maybe if a team says, hey, we could use a player like Nico Mirotic for this season and beyond, we'll take Nico. You shed this gross you eat this gross contract of ours, and we'll throw you a draft pick. To me, that's the most logical thing that the Bulls should be looking for. And a team that, to me, that jumps out is the Lakers. You know, they have a couple of bad contracts, including one former Bull by the name of Luol Deng, and they would love to get his contract off their books. And it's not like the Bulls would bring Deng back to be anything other than a veteran leader. He's certainly declined in his later years compared to the, you know, two-time All-Star that he was in his prime with the Bulls. But, I mean, can't you see the Bulls making that move because they loved so much the leadership of Luol Deng while he was here?
Yeah, I'm totally, I was with you with that too. Back in November when we had kind of this early kind of conversation, was talking about the Lakers seemed like a fit, and that's where things could get interesting. It depends on what the Lakers value in terms of what they want to keep around, because they're kind of hanging on that edge, I feel like, right now, where they're a one-off season away from signing a legit superstar to be a playoff contention, sort of a, hopefully being on the verge of being a championship contender. They're right there, one or two years away, two, three signings away from possibly doing that. The bad thing is they don't have any first round draft picks, and they're not going to give something up like their top five pick, or, and I'm pretty sure their top three are owned to Boston. And if they get out of that top three, then they'll keep their own pick. But I'm looking at the 20 through 30 picks in the 2018 draft. And if you haven't taken a look at this, so Minnesota owns one of those picks right now. They own Oklahoma City's pick, so I imagine it'd be between 20 and 30. Atlanta owns two picks. They own the Timberwolves pick, which right now would be at 24. They also own Houston's pick at 28. And then the Brooklyn Nets own the Toronto Raptors pick at 27. If the NBA had ended today, if the season had ended today, the Brooklyn Nets own Toronto's pick at number 27. So it only leaves six teams with their own original pick. And that's minus Milwaukee, too, who can't even trade their first round pick this offseason. So now you're limited in the teams that you have to focus on in terms of who would take Nico Mirotic and what the value is. I'm with you on that. I don't think you're getting anything better than a late first round pick for Nico Mirotic. And that's probably having to come with a contract shedder, too. And so I'm looking at teams like this, like Minnesota would be an interesting possibility, but then you have to figure out who Minnesota would be able to shed, kind of matching that money. Atlanta doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. They're in a rebuild mode. What would they use Nico for? What would they use Robin for? It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Brooklyn would be also an interesting place too. Brooklyn's kind of on that threshold of, you know, we traded all of our first round picks away. We don't really have a lot, so we're going to try to compete now. They got D'Angelo Russell there. They've got guys like Karius LeVert and a few other pieces that make them a little bit interesting. So adding Nico might be interesting there too. So those are kind of a couple other teams that I would throw in the idea of maybe wanting to acquire Nico outside of teams like the Washington Wizards, like I brought up before. But yeah, if you're talking about value for Nico Mirotic, yeah, he probably can warrant a first round pick now the way he's playing right now. But let's be honest, we said it before. The Bulls aren't fleecing anybody. They know what the long-term projection of Nico Mirotic and the long-term makeup of what Nico Mirotic has been over the course of the last four seasons. That doesn't just get completely thrown out the window just because he had a good month in December.
And something else that needs mentioning, and you know, maybe we've mentioned it once or twice before as we've talked about some of the questionable trades the Bulls have executed in recent history. Look, I think we're all on board with saying that the Jimmy Butler trade is looking better and better. When you contemplate the money you would have had to give Jimmy to be the best player on a middling, going nowhere team in the back half of his prime compared to what the Bulls have compiled right now in exchange for Jimmy, that trade is looking better. But the campaign trade with Taj and Doug was awful. Trading away their second round draft pick rights on draft night when starting rebuild, awful. Giving the 16th pick back to Minnesota in the Jimmy Butler trade still looks kind of bad. You say, like, really? Was that really a deal breaker? You couldn't convince Tom Thibodeau, who very, very much so wanted Jimmy Butler on his team again, to let the Bulls keep the 16th pick in addition to getting number 7? That's a factor. Gar Foreman, for the most part, is known as a pushover at the negotiating table. At least from the Bulls fans' perspective, it seems like a lot of times the Bulls have gotten the raw end of the deal on trades. So maybe whatever you think that these players' value is at a trading table, knock 15, maybe 20% of that value off because of Gar Foreman. He's the one negotiating the trades, and he's not very good at it.
Yeah, one thing to note too on that too is we don't really know what the Bulls are trying to do. They haven't. We've picked a direction in terms of rebuilding. I get that. That's an overall long-term goal. But in terms of short-term, they haven't told really anybody what they want to do with pieces. Are you going to keep this roster around? They've talked about how much they like Robin Lopez, so that gives me the inkling that if they aren't overwhelmed by an offer for Robin Lopez by a team, that they probably will keep him around. Now, whether or not they do the same thing with Nico Mirotic, that's still to be said. You know, Nico's even come out as late as last week to say that nothing's really changed. They said if there's a contending team that wants me and there's a fit, I'll waive my no trade clause, no problem. So now I look at it too. If you start moving some of these pieces away in order to lose, what does that do for the morale of the team? Does it do anything? Does it stunt anybody's growth on this team? Like, say, Lauri Markkanen, say, like, Chris Dunn. Does it stunt any of those players that you're trying to develop by basically taking away the pieces that they're playing well with? And you could even throw Bobby Portis's name in there, too, with how well he's played with Nico, you know, over the stretch of this last month. So is it going to stunt any of those guys' growth in terms of what you think that they are and how they're playing well right now? Does it take away from any of that if you trade away some of those pieces? And ultimately, you've got to kind of make that decision. And I feel like that's going to be the toughest decision here, because as much as Bulls fans are crying to get that top 5 pick, like I am too, it's also, do you really want to hurt what you have going right now with some of your young players and your developing talent? And also, you got to look at too, what's Zach LaVine going to do when he returns? Are you really going to push for that win? So I think there's just a lot of questions up in the air for this team as we look forward into the trading deadline. And some of these questions are going to have to be answered by the front office in terms of whether they make a move or they say it in their own words.
I'm not entirely worried about the stunting of growth. I get it as a train of thought, as a logical concern for a young team losing too much and losing players who they play with as teammates who make them better. And it's crazy that we're talking about a certain Nico Mirotic when talking about that, you know, what his departure might mean for his younger teammates and Robin Lopez as well. I mean, at the same time, are you really concerned about the vague, you know, indefinable stunting of growth concern more than losing out on a top tier pick? Because I'm not. I mean, I am not at all. And look, if you want to talk about stunting of growth, I mean, what are you concerned about? You want Zach LaVine, once he's back, Chris Dunn, and Lauri Markkanen to continue to get better and build chemistry as the core of this young team. Do I think that all of their collective ability to continue to build chemistry and get better goes out the window if you trade Nico? No, I don't. I really, really don't.
What about Robin Lopez?
No, I don't. Look, I know that if Lopez gets traded, they'll miss him. And you can say the same for Nico, even though, you know, you and I have both had our fun putting, you know, giving jabs to Nico about, you know, most of this team maybe being okay with him hitting the old dusty trail. But it seems like that's actually not the case. It seems like everybody's been very happy to have him back, and he's been sort of the catalyst for this turnaround. And if either or both of those guys get traded, they'll be missed in the locker room, without a doubt. Neither of them are in the plan for the future. So these young guys that the Bulls are trying to build around, they are going to have to step up, take more ownership of what this team is, who this team is, and that's a challenge they'll have to face. So go face it. And if it means you lose a lot more games, great, more ping pong balls.
And that's something we can go back to even what David Locke had told us, you know, a few weeks prior, back in the middle of December, when we were talking to him about our preview with the Jazz. And he said, you know, I even asked him, you know, like, moving Robin Lopez, does that do anything to Chris Dunn, even though Chris Dunn has played so well when Robin Lopez has been on the floor? And he said, you know what, if Chris Dunn can't figure it out with somebody else and he can't use that skill that he has to play better with other people, then he isn't worth anything. And, you know,
exactly. And that's a damn good point.
And that's being blunt and honest about it. But and ultimately, like you had said, if these guys can't grow on their own and use what they learned from some of these other guys, and after they moved on, like Robin Lopez or Nico Mirotic or Justin Holiday, whoever the Bulls decide to trade, or if they even do decide to trade any of those guys, they're right. You know, ultimately, you have to take that step on your own. And I just wonder if the Bulls have pieces to not only make those guys better, maybe like players like Lauri Markkanen, or even, God forbid, if Robin Lopez is traded, then you got to play Cristiano Felicio. Maybe you figure out what's going on with him. There's a lot of things, but ultimately, if you want Chris Dunn to be ultimately that all-star caliber point guard that maybe, just maybe, he's shown that he could possibly be down the road, he's got to do it on his own.
Yeah, he does. And, you know, if not Felicio, then they can just pick the fattest guy at the United Center that night and let him play center.
Eddie Curry showing up to games now?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Throw him a jersey. They still probably got one of those old number 2 Eddie Curry jerseys lying around the UC somewhere.
You want to hear something crazy as we wrap up the show? I heard this on one of the radio stations in Chicago yesterday. Some guy called into their station and said that the most pressure that any athlete in Chicago has had on them since pre-Michael Jordan has been on Eddie Curry and Tyson Chandler. They were talking about Trubisky being the guy that has come in and had to have immediate success, and he's had the most pressure in Chicago sports on him. And some guy called up and said Eddie Curry and Tyson Chandler had more pressure on them to be elite stars right away than Mitchell Trubisky had right now. And I just had to laugh at that. I had to absolutely cry laughing at that.
I mean, they kind of did.
In what sense, though?
Like that was a big gamble after the, you know, so the first year of the rebuild post MJ Dynasty, they drafted Elton Brand, and Elton Brand was rookie of the year. And then they traded him away. And then, you know, all of a sudden, it's like Jerry Cross was so excited about, like, oh, you know, I got the Twin Towers. I got Curry and Chandler, and we're going to build the next dynasty around these two. There was a lot of pressure on that duo when they were in Chicago because Bulls fans were hungry to get back to relevance. They, you know, nobody in Chicago was like, yeah, take your time with this rebuild post-Jordan. No, we were all used to winning championships and starving for more. So, I mean... Look, there's a lot of pressure on Mitch Trubisky in Chicago right now, and rightfully so. The Bears haven't been relevant since they went to the NFC Championship game in 2010 and lost to Green Bay.
I wouldn't even call that relevant.
I mean, I'd say that's pretty relevant. You're in the NFC Championship game, that's relevant.
It was 1 year, though.
But that was 7 years ago.
Right.
So there's a lot of pressure on Mitch. But, I mean, you know, is there more pressure on Dunn, LaVine, Markkanen right now than there was on Curry and Chandler way back when? I wouldn't necessarily say so.
And I think for the fact that, like, trying to figure out who had the most pressure on them since, like, pre-Michael Jordan, since when some of the younger guys in the Bears, since even the 85 Bears, you're talking about a single player or two players that have had the most pressure in Chicago situations. Like, they were making a case for Mitch Trubisky. Okay, I can get that. But I just didn't understand the Tyson Chandler, Eddie Curry sort of pressure. I get it. After the Jordan years, they were trying to find a way to become relevant again. But it's not like you were starving for championships. You had just won six in the 90s. So for somebody to be super pressurized by the fact that they had to come in and blow the door off things and be these superstars, I don't think there was that much pressure as there is, like, when we're talking about Mitch Trubisky. He's you know, the Bears haven't been relevant. They haven't been a Super Bowl contention since what? You talk about the season with Rex Grossman in 07 against the Colts, and then maybe even 2010 when Jay Cutler brought him to the NFC championship. But then before that, what have you had? You've had nothing but failures. So I just thought it was interesting that somebody would bring up Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry as, like, having the most pressure. If you think about any of the young athletes Chicago has had since 1985, I just thought it was kind of an interesting argument and probably not the most comprehensive one.
No, I mean, and like, let's be honest, Chicago is still a Bears town first and foremost. It, you know, so
not for much longer.
It doesn't really feel like that with, you know, the Hawks winning three cups in 6 years, the Cubs winning the World Series last year, and the Bulls, regardless of what they're doing, are always filling the United Center. You know, let's spend a bunch of money saying Fygar, Pegs, Billboard, whatever, but still, let's all go to the UC, watch the Bulls play. My point is, Mitch probably has more pressure on him right now than any young Bulls in this rebuild, because he plays the most important position on the Bears, and it's a position that Bears fans have been starving for fresh life for years. I mean, you know, the Jay Cutler experiment, by and large, disappointment. And now there's a lot of pressure on this young rookie quarterback to deliver. Probably, I mean, I'd say with great confidence, he's got more pressure on him coming into the Bears 2018 season than Dunn, Markkanen, and LaVine have on them coming into the back half of this season and even next season.
To just finalize that, I would take that Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry comparison of most pressure, and I would raise you on that to Derrick Rose. I think, you know, Derrick Rose obviously accomplished things early on in his career, but if you're talking about a young superstar that needs to come in and win right now, I think after that first injury and then him just coming off an MVP season and that first injury happening, I think there was probably the most pressure you could have as an athlete in Chicago, like Derrick Rose had, because he had success so early and right at the beginning, and then people hoping that he would come back and be the same. So, like, if I had to pick somebody with the single most pressure on them in Chicago sports since 1985, coming in and having to be successful, I would counter the Mitch Trubisky, the whoever you even want to throw in there, with Derrick Rose.
I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that. I mean, I might even go so far as to say that Derrick Rose, at a certain point in his Bulls career, had more pressure on him than even Michael Jordan at any time that Michael Jordan put on a Bulls jersey. Michael Jordan was the greatest winner this league has ever seen, and he delivered time and again for the Bulls, brought us six championships. Did he ever have... I mean, when he had his one major injury of his career, the broken foot in 85, 86... nobody knew how good he was going to be. He certainly flashed as a rookie, showed his star potential, broke his foot early the next season. That pressure wasn't there. He wasn't the MVP of the league. Derrick Rose tears his ACL the season following his MVP season. Everybody in Chicago says, get back out there and play, kid. Go bring us another championship. That never happened to Jordan in all of his year.
Yeah, and I think that's a testament to what Jordan did. And like you had talked about, the starvation for excellency and the starvation for being back and to be relevant again.
And you know, like, Jordan created that need like among the fan base for winning.
Absolutely. And I think that's what caused even more pressure to Derrick Rose. And then you can also throw in the factor too that he was from Chicago and the storyline was built up so heavily. So I would have to counter any of that argument with Derrick Rose.
Something specific comes to mind. You know, this conversation could get off the rails quickly, but you know, before we wrap up, something I just want to highlight there. You talk about the pressure that Rose faces and the pressure that he faced that was built by a Jordan dynasty. I remember a game during the 2010-11 season when they honored the 20th anniversary of the first Bulls title team, the 91 title team, at halftime. You know, MJ was there, Scotty was there, Craig Hodges, Pax, Stacey King, you know, all those guys came back and had a halftime ceremony honoring the 20-year anniversary. And Jordan stood on the center of the United Center court and said, you look at this team playing here right now tonight, and, you know, it's D. Rose and it's Joakim and it's Luol, and they're all watching this happen in their seats on the bench. And MJ said, don't be surprised if you have 6 more rings coming. Those were MJ's words. You want to talk about pressure being put on a young kid from Chicago and Derrick Rose? That is some big freaking pressure right there.
Yeah, that's crazy. I didn't even know about that. I forgot about that. I didn't even know he said that. So, I mean, like, there you go. Case closed. That I think we've just solved the mystery of if any athlete had the most pressure on them, single young athlete in Chicago since 85, then we probably made our pretty good argument for Derrick Rose.
Boom. Yeah, who cares about Mitch Trubisky or Eddie Curry and Tyson Chandler?
Well, that's good about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter and social media at Locked On Bulls, at Bulls_Peck, and at Jordan C. Malley. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Live on Dash Radio tomorrow morning, DashRadio.com and the Dash Radio app, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media. Everywhere you find podcasts, you can find us. That includes iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere else you listen to podcasts, more than likely we'll be there. Remember, give us a rating, 5-star rating, give us a review, give us some feedback, whether you want to put it on iTunes. We'd love it if you would do that. It helps with us, it helps you guys, and it helps with the feedback and how the show is structured. So go ahead and leave us a review if you have time. Takes about 15 seconds, and we'd more than appreciate that from you. Remember, live on Dash Radio tomorrow. We'll be back with a fresh episode tomorrow. We'll kind of dive into a few more of your questions, as well as a look at Bulls history in this week, and also some NBA draft scouts and prospects from this week in college basketball. But for Jordan and Matt, we are out. Enjoy the game tonight, Bulls and Raptors at 8 o'clock. Have a good night.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.